Thank you, Pat, for reading that so valiantly. It's such a long passage. We are living in unusual times. It seems that almost every hour countries are changing restrictions and legislation. My Twitter feed can't keep up fast enough, and many people are anxious and confused. As an early aside to my sermon, please can I just reiterate what Jenny has said, which is that if you would like to pray with someone before you go about the situation, please do. We have people in our prayer area. And if you need help with lifestyle changes, please talk to someone. We are working out as a church what this looks like, so let's do that together. There is so much in today's passage to think about. So much, and you'll be pleased to know I'm not going to attempt all of it, but what I am going to think about is something that I think stands out quite strongly, and that's the theme of good conversations. Good conversations. What can we learn about that from our passage? Jesus was tired and thirsty, we read. He needed something. He needed water. The Samaritan woman needed to hear the hope of the Messiah. She also needed something. But there was a mutuality to their ability to offer something as well. They both had something to bring. We might see this as a rather imbalanced societal moment, the Jewish man and the Samaritan woman. Jews and Samaritans were not supposed to be conversing, let alone sharing a cup. Men and women alone were not supposed to be conversing. She was probably of low social standing and unlikely to have had any wealth. It's thought that she might have been at the well alone at noon to avoid other people. Why else would you go out in the heat of the sun when everyone else would have been there early in the day when it was cooler? Perhaps a surprising choice of conversation partner for Jesus at first glance. But if we strip away all these social structures, we are left with two people who both need something and both have something to offer. I think we can find it difficult to admit our own needs and vulnerabilities to ourselves and even more to others. How different would our conversations be if we were able to be honest about our needs? It might not be something physical. It might actually be fear. What you're doing or advocating is making me feel afraid. What you are saying is making me feel unloved and forgotten. So much of our national conversation in the last few years seems to have gone without this level of honesty. We ignore people who don't think like us. Even if the argument they're trying to make isn't very truthful, you can't ignore the way something is making them feel. You can't ignore their lived reality. When we are in conversation with God, we can be totally honest, completely vulnerable. We can admit our fear, our failure, our confusion, our frustration, and our anger. And he listens in his love for us. He doesn't discard our fears, tell us that they're unfounded or unjust. Jesus, standing in front of the Samaritan woman, did not criticize her or laugh at her, but he gently responded to what she was saying. Good conversation needs honesty and vulnerability. I've asked both the Chrises if they would just come and have a short conversation with me, and I didn't warn them about what I was going to ask them to do, except to say that they'd need to speak about something. So Sam and I tried this earlier. What I'd like you to do is to imagine you've just come into church this evening, you know each other already, but I'd like you to have a conversation without asking any questions. Just see how you go.
Hello.
Hello.
Nice to see you.
Lovely to see you.
Isn't it nice in here? Oh, no.
Bong. You can carry on for a bit.
I hope you got here okay.
That's a question.
You got here okay?
It is nice in here.
The weather's really nice today.
Yep.
Thanks. I'll let you off now.
It's actually very, very hard, isn't it?
It's incredibly difficult. Please try it. Find a friend. It's not until you try doing that that you realize how much of our conversation is based on questions. It is staggeringly difficult to hold any kind of meaningful conversation without asking any, or at least implying some, in our tone of voice. The Samaritan woman in our passage asks questions. It is good to ask questions of each other and of God. It's what we encourage on Alpha. We encourage more questions than answers. It's a place to be really open about that. And questions reveal our honesty and our desire to engage with the other. The Psalms are full of people asking questions. The Old Testament lectionary reading for today that we didn't read is in Exodus 17, and it's about Moses and the people of Israel in the wilderness. The people are angry, and they are complaining at Moses. And Moses goes to God and says, "What am I going to do? What am I meant to do with these people? They're going to kill me." He doesn't doubt God's graciousness. He doesn't doubt God's goodness, but he does take his questions to God. Why is this happening to me? And what should I do about it? The Samaritan woman isn't being sarcastic or angry or divisive or accusatory. She is simply asking the questions that are important to her, the things that she's confused about. She is genuinely expecting there to be an answer to which she will listen. William, our six-year-old, feels like he's really back in a question-asking place. So recent gems have included, do God and Jesus wear the same costume? That's for Jenny. How many spears did the Egyptians have? And can coronavirus spread underwater? When I don't know the answer, and if I'm honest, when I'm just a little bit fed up of the questions, I say something like, that's a great question, William. I think Daddy might know the answer to that. Or, oh, that's interesting. Should we look it up later and find out? I don't really want him to stop asking questions. It's a really good thing. So I want him to be encouraged to do it, to think out loud, even if they make no sense to me, even if they're trivial and, quite frankly, boring. God wants us to ask questions about him. And thankfully, he's a lot more patient than I am. That's partly why we meet in home groups, to read the Bible together, to think about things in our lives, why we meet as God and beer, to ask questions about big issues. What is his character like? How can we know him better? What does this mean for my life today? How do I know what the Bible says about something? Good conversations need questions. And we need to listen to the answers too. My third thing for a good conversations take time. How often do you find yourself saying, I have not got time for this. I haven't got time for this. I'm too busy today. We are busy people, and giving of our time to listen and to talk can feel like quite a big sacrifice for many of us. Jesus took time to talk with a Samaritan woman. He listened to her questions. He showed compassion for her. He didn't hurry her or just say everything in one go or leave once he'd got the water that he wanted. He took the time to sit with her in conversation. He wasn't planning on meeting her that day. She wasn't in his diary. He was on his way from Judea to Galilee, and he'd stopped for a break, but he waited to be with her anyway. This is the longest conversation recorded of Jesus in any of the Gospels. This woman was offered living water by Jesus, and she responds by saying, "Yes, I'd like some of that." She still doesn't quite grasp what's going on. And then what does Jesus do? He goes straight for her weak point. "Go and call your husband," he says. "Go and call your husband." Her lowest point. Whatever the reason behind her multiple marriages, and we don't know, it could have been infertility, it could have been having to marry a series of brothers as they died, it could be anything. It was likely to be an element of deep shame and sadness for her. Why would he do that? Why would he bring that up when she just said yes to him? If we want to say yes to the living water, if we want to start out following Christ, then our lowest, most honest, most shameful point is the place we've got to start. We've got to start at our lowest point. I read yesterday about a Catholic theologian named James Allison, who describes faith in Jesus not as an intellectual climb to theological greatness, but a relaxing into the presence of God. It's a bit uncomfortable at first, but the more honest we are, the more time we give to being in God's presence, to realizing how much he loves us, the more we get used to it, the more we relax a bit, and we realize that we can be our real selves. When we come for communion in a few minutes, we're not coming as a reward for our good behavior. We're coming in recognition of our brokenness and in what Jesus Christ has done for us on the cross. My last point is that good conversations mean we should expect to be surprised and changed. When we really approach conversations well, we should expect to be surprised and changed. I did not have the opportunity to ask a behavioral psychologist any of my questions this week while I was preparing, but my gut feeling is that we generally don't go into conversations expecting to learn anything or to have our minds changed. You only need to spend 5 minutes scrolling on Twitter to know that listening with an open mind appears to be practiced by very, very few people. In the passage, it's really interesting to compare the reaction of the Samaritan woman when Jesus told her about the living water and the disciples when Jesus said to them, "I have food to eat that you do not know about." They were so fixed on their ideas, they'd just been to buy Jesus some food, that they could not contemplate a meaning other than literal food. It just didn't occur to them. When we approach God, do we expect to be surprised? To be changed? Do we want to be changed? When we open our Bibles or take time to pray, do we ask God to change us? Some of us are actually quite good at looking like we're listening and making the right noises just to move the conversation on and get on with our day. But do we carry it with us, choosing to reflect on it in order to seek transformation? Is that what we do with God? I've got a video clip, if Richard is able to get it up on the screen for us. Is that going to work? Marvellous.
Hey, Murph.
Hey, Ronathan.
Aren't you having trouble with your computer?
Yeah.
Thanks. I really like that because it reminds me of sometimes how I think maybe I act when I listen to my children, which is look really, really interested, but actually think, I don't know what you're saying, and I can't listen anymore. The Samaritan's woman's life was completely changed by her conversation. Hopefully this guy's problem will be fixed, but only temporarily. I don't think I can imagine how joyful and excited she must have looked when she returned to her city, to all these people who generally ostracized her, telling them about the man who told me everything I have ever done. It's a really fascinating way of introducing Jesus to people. And she must have been really convincing, because in verse 30 it says, they left the city and were on their way to him. Her transformation led to that of others. Later on it says, many Samaritans from that city believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I had ever done. It reminds us that all of us can be witnesses to Jesus Christ in our community. We don't need to have convincing theological or historical arguments. We don't need to have the full story. She certainly didn't. We just need to speak gently and honestly about the Jesus Christ that we have met and in whom we place our hope. In the next few weeks, there is much to be uncertain about as a country. But as Christians, we have hope in the living water, Jesus Christ. Perhaps the different situations ahead will bring new chances for conversations with our families, with new people, with God. Maybe some of us might start making phone calls again instead of pinging texts at one another. So let's be honest and ask questions and take time and surprise ourselves with what God can do.